Warning: The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Standing in the way of progress, I'm not tired. I'm just getting started. You can throw whatever you want at me. Keep it coming. We're going to get this done. We're going to get health care done. We're going to get clean energy done. We're going to get climate change done. We're going to fix our schools. We are going to deal with the problems internationally that I was elected to deal with.
Well, there it is. That's the real Obama behind closed doors at a fundraiser in San Francisco, where his base resides. And he's saying he's not tired. He's just getting started. Throw it in what you want. So in addition to bankrupting America by taking a $1 trillion deficit that his predecessor created and turning it into a $3 trillion deficit, within the first year, this megalomaniac says he's only getting started. That after he forces socialized medicine down the throats of Americans through political maneuvers that are unheard of, he's then going to go after so-called climate change legislation, which is another lie, another absolute lie, and of the pill-popping lunatic in England, Gordon Brown, that warns that unless everyone signs in the dotted line to a new world order that can take control of your life, with regard to climate change, we have only 50 days to save the world, according to the pill-popping Gordon Brown. And by the way, if we do sign on to this climate change rubric, it would cost more than World Wars I and II and the Depression combined. I believe these people are clinically insane, and I believe all of us are in danger of losing our freedoms and our life unless we stand up with the truth and hold a cross up to the vampires of lies, the vampires that are spewing lies, whether it be the White House, whether it be 10 Downing Street, whether it be the guy in Paris, the skirt chaser, doesn't know what he's doing, just put someone in a skirt with perfume and the guy loses his mind if he ever had one. The whole West, according to me, one man's opinion, is ruled by an elite that care only about their own personal careers. They could care less about you. You are the peons. Today on the Savage Nation, I have an exclusive interview that not even Fox News was able to get. I don't know that they would even want it. I have a feeling that the 19 with Geert Wilders on the Savage Nation, and we're going to play that interview for you shortly on the Savage Nation. I don't know if you know who he is, but he is a member of parliament in Holland. He's a libertarian. He believes in independence and freedom, just like our founding fathers did. And because of that, he's been hunted like a dog by radical Islamists who are being protected by the government themselves. That's right. The Dutch member of parliament, Geert Wilders, just last week won an appeal against Britain's decision to bar his entry to the UK. And he's going to be going there shortly to run a film called Fitna, which is a warning to the West. That unless the West comes to understand the dangers of radical Islam, they're going to be taken over. And he compares the fight to the fight that his ancestors had to make against Hitler when Hitler invaded Holland. That's how desperate he says things really are. He will be with us shortly in this interview on the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. The website is michaelsavage.com. Many of you are living with your heads in the sand. You don't even know what is going on, or you think that Obama means only well for you and everyone around you. I would remind you that those who do not know their history are condemned to repeat it. And many of you dummies on the left have been duped as the useful idiots you are, a phrase coined by Lenin, I believe. You have been the useful idiots to usher in this international socialist, Barack Hussein Obama, who wants to tell you how to run your life from cradle to grave. I will take your calls now on the Savage Nation. Houston, Texas. Daniel, welcome to the program.
If this bum's just getting started, what's next? The Constitutional Convention? I've been reading reports online that these Democrats are talking about having a Constitutional Convention and taking over the world, taking over this country and doing it once.
I knew a leftist 30 years ago, another constitutional law professor, never worked a day in his life, a radical leftist. I knew him in the university. He was after a con all of his life, a constitutional convention, to revise the Constitution and turn us into a banana republic. So this is a long-term plan of the Obama school of the Constitution, which is to throw the Constitution out and rewrite it in the image of themselves, Daniel. Thank you for the call. By the way, here's another one. Here are some headlines from my website. Iran threatens to invade Pakistan. Did you hear about this one? There was a bombing against the Iranian Revolutionary Guard over the weekend by a suicide bomber. They got a taste of their own medicine, and they lost four top generals. Did you hear this story? You didn't hear it on Puffball, did you? You didn't hear it on any of the Democrat operative shows, did you? No, but you see, apparently our, I don't know who did it, whether it was the Israeli Secret Service, the Pakistani Secret Service, the British Secret Service, or the American Secret CIA. I don't know who did this, but I say thank God we're giving them a taste of their own medicine. So now the lunatics in Iran are threatening to invade Pakistan because they got a taste of their own suicide bombing methods. They didn't like it. They lost four generals. Here's a domestic story.
Bonnie Frank, you know Bonnie, the man who gave the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and robbed billions of dollars in my pockets in order to make Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. Well, Bonnie Frank is doing it anyway. Whether you know it or not, he's still giving it to you. Giving it to you because he said days of ore. When he meant days of ore, he meant days of ORE, not days of AWE. Bonnie Frank, is still giving up easy money mortgages that you'll have to pay for. That's right. So if you think Bonnie Frank is true, you're wrong. Bonnie Frank is just getting started with his good friend Rahm Emanuel. Rahm, step right up here, will you, please? I'll be right back.
Savage.
Is the Savage Nation. We have the exclusive interview with Geert Wilders coming up. And the reason it's important, it's not so much about Britain and the ban and getting over the ban. It's that he created a third party years ago in Holland. He was a member of parliament, but they wouldn't listen to him. They marginalized him. They tried to demonize him because he was a nationalist. And he said, we're being taken over by radical Islam. We have elitists running us off the rails, blah, blah, blah. So he said they created a third party. Right now, his party has achieved 20% of the vote, which in a country with six different parties is quite a big margin. He could probably become the next prime minister of Holland. Let's pray to God that he does. And so you have to understand that unless America gets a third party that's viable, we are finished. We're going down the world a toilet. We're going down the toilet of Goldman Sachs, Uber Alles. What's good for the fat cat bankers will be good for you, whether you like it or not. That's why they're pushing climate change, because they're going to make trillions of dollars on so-called green energy, number one, and by taxing you to death, number two. It'll all go into their pockets and the pockets of their henchmen. Make no mistake about it. It has nothing to do with reality or science. Moreover, the science is absolutely not divided anymore. More top scientists realize that they've been hoodwinked into this UN proposal on so-called global warming, which they changed to climate change, blah, 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 than ever before. They're going to try to ensnare you with this environmental garbage the same way they've done with education over the years. But let's get back to the case at hand. We have very big stories today. We have Obama promising that he's just gotten started. He's going to get health care done, meaning the destruction of our health care system, which is the best in the world. He's going to then go at climate change, which, as you well know, is a front for a new world order, United Nations-run climate control organization, which will dictate to you when you can turn heat on, when you could turn air conditioning on, when you could turn a light bulb on and off. In other words, you'll be living in a new Soviet Union. He's then going to go on to revamping the schools, meaning to brainwash your children into Maoist philosophy along the lines of his communications chief, who loves Mao Zedong. He didn't mention the big one, the 400-pound gorilla, which is immigration. He then intends to jam 30 million illegal aliens down your throat. 1-800-449-8255, New Hampshire. William, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, I'm convinced that you were banned in Britain as part of a strategy that was conceived early this year, late last year, to implement the fairness in broadcasting doctrine. The strategy works like this. You look for someone, a fall guy, a villain, who has four characteristics. One, he has strongly stated opinions that can be misconstrued and misinterpreted on the floor in Congress to make him seem dangerous. Two, he has no support from the Brahmin Northeastern United States conservative community. Three, he has no particular support in Congress because he's an equal opportunity commenter. If he sees bad, he comments upon it regardless of the party. And four, someone...
Gee, I think I know who you're talking about, William. You're a real New Englander.
Yes, indeed, sir.
You're one of the real, real New Englanders. I didn't know any of you were left.
And I think that the reason that, and for the characteristic of this villain is, my goodness, he was so bad that he was banned in Britain, though in fact he remains uncontrolled in the United States. Therefore, we need to deal with this guy. Therefore, we need a fairness in broadcasting. I'll tell you what.
I agree with you 100%, and that's why I've been trying to get the others in the conservative media to recognize that I am the canary in the mine shaft. If they do this to me, they're going to do it to them one by one. The next one will be Glenn Beck, who copies virtually everything I do. Then it will be, who knows, whatever. You know who's going to go after. And the only one they won't touch is Rush Limbaugh, who to me is a tool of the Republican Party, and they need him. They need a Team A, Team B game playing in order to make sure that the true independent American voice is never heard. I agree with you 100%. This is a test, and they're getting away with it because of the silence of the media. But I'm not going to complain about it anymore, but William. As I said, I'm through with my thing. I did the Cambridge speech last week. I want to ban the ban, but I'm going to do this for you, William. I have only 100 copies left of the first printing, first edition. Would you permit me to send you a free copy of Banned in Britain? Because that's what I'd like to do.
Oh, I'd love it. And I would comment one other thing, Michael.
Well, William, are you retired or are you currently, what did you do as a professional? What do you do?
Among things, I worked for the U.S. Forest Service as a modeler of the climate.
Oh, my God. A man who actually knows what is going on. I think the snowpack is going to be quite thick in New Hampshire this year.
I can give you a quick moment about why this climate thing is totally, totally bankrupt from a different perspective that you as a scientist will grasp instantaneously.
Please do.
This whole business is based upon one proven scientific fact, and that is what's called a statistical correlation between temperature and carbon dioxide. Now, whenever you have a mathematical correlation, there's three possible reasons. A, carbon dioxide.
Well, let me just translate that for the average listener. They are saying that the carbon dioxide is the villain, because it's driving global temperatures up. You're saying that the conclusion may be faulty.
That what they have is a mathematical correlation. One goes up, the other goes up, and this is merely noted with empirical data. There are three possibilities when that occurs. One, carbon dioxide causes temperature to go up. Two, an increase in temperature causes carbon dioxide to go up. Or three, a third variable not being considered causes them each to go up independent of each other. Now, scientifically, they should be exploring each of those alternatives to see if they can prove any of the three. In fact, they have proven none of the three. But
Al Gore latched on to this carbon dioxide fallacy and has run very far with it. Just 3 weeks ago, his friend Obama gave him a $592 million loan to start a hybrid car company in Norway, I believe. So it's very lucrative for Al Gore. He's made a fortune on this, hasn't he? And let's not forget that Al Gore's father ran the Occidental Coal Company. So Al Gore is living on the residuals of coal income while putting down products that increase pollution and carbon dioxide. The man is making a bloody fortune off this.
Al Gore is, General Electric is, because they stand to produce a whole new set of technology that is in some way correspondent with this theory, and it's totally unnecessary because...
Hey, let me, William, I want to ask you, whatever happened with acid rain? Remember 20 years ago that was threatening to wipe out all our forests? Whatever happened with that?
That is still an issue. The forests have more buffering than we had thought in much of the country. In New England,
you mean nature was able to defend itself against the the increase in acidity in the clouds?
Yes, and there were all sorts of theories about how well different parts of the country could affect this buffering. It turns out that in states like Vermont, with its soil types, it can quite easily endure the acid rain. New Hampshire.
Unbelievable. Well, no, look, I am so enamored of this for a number of reasons, William, because the human body, I was taught as a child, is extremely resilient, able to fend off all sorts of invasions, you know, of various microbes in ways that doctors are still amazed at. Natural remedies can be used and such. And so we're not these little flowers that can easily be wiped out by a little sneeze or whatever, any more than the earth is a little flower easily knocked out by a little extra carbon dioxide, which may in fact be caused by a sunspot, for example. And I have argued, as well as anyone else who has a seventh grade education in science, by the way, that a little extra carbon dioxide is actually good for mankind because it will increase food production rather than decreasing it. How is it that Al Gore and his moronic friends don't understand that extra carbon dioxide is actually good for the earth?
I don't know. It's part of the natural buffering process. And you mentioning sunspots, interestingly, there is a 100-year ongoing study using crude methods.
We're running out of time. William, let's do this again. This is fabulous. I could do an hour of this. Free copy of the last 100 copies of Banned in Britain. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Well, you've been asking for it for a long time now, and now it's happening. Geert Wilders, the Dutch lawmaker, who has been castigated for speaking the truth about radical Islam, joins us now for an exclusive interview on the Savage Nation. He was banned from Britain, and that ban was just overturned in the courts. This is his first American interview since he was allowed back in England. Geert, thank you very much for being with us today on the Savage Nation radio program.
It's an honor for me to be on your show.
Well, you're the real honored guest because you've been through, as a movie once said, to hell and back. How many years were you on that list of banned individuals?
Well, actually, I don't know that I was on a list of banned individuals in the United Kingdom, but I heard in February this year when I wanted to travel to the United Kingdom that Jackie Smith, the then Home Secretary, banned me from entering. So I don't think I'm actually on the list, but she just banned me for entering because she thought that my presence would endanger community harmony and therefore public security of that kind of nonsense.
Yes, of course. I'm on a list with murderers and terrorists. It's interesting to me that so-called liberals would link speech with the action of murderers. To them, I guess speech and action are one and the same.
Exactly.
Your movie is the most important part of this discussion. All you want to do is show the short film called Fitna, which explores the Quran. Have you shown that yet in England?
No, not yet. But millions of people have watched it on the internet by now. But no, we plan to show it in March next year. And I still hope I will be allowed then to enter. As you know, the UK courts last week overruled the decision of the British government, the cowardly decision to ban me. So I went over last Friday and talked to one of my friends of the House of Lords, Lord Malcolm Pearson, and we agreed to try again in March 2010. And it was really ridiculous that the UK government thought that there would be some kind of rouse or whatever in the streets of London, because I showed fitna in the United States Senate, in the Parliament of Denmark, in Jerusalem, in Rome, next month in the Parliament of the Czech Republic, and never anything has happened. So I'm afraid, like with you, it's more a political decision than a decision that is based on any law. It's just the dimitude and the weakness of the liberal cultural relativists that unfortunately are in charge in Europe today.
Garrett, you know, I noticed while you were speaking, outside were some of the most hate-filled practitioners of the religion of peace, screaming things such as Sharia law will be dominating England, we will dominate, kill those who insult Islam. I thought they were the best advertisement for why your film should be seen everywhere before it's too late.
Exactly. They exactly proved my point. While I was holding a press conference with Lord Malcolm Pearson in the UK Parliament, there were a bunch, a mob really, of Muslims shouting that I should be have capital punishment and that Sharia should be enforced in the whole of Europe and freedom go to hell is what they shouted. And
why are they allowed to stay in England? That's considered freedom of speech, but my espousing of nationalist and tendencies, meaning a nation should be defined by its borders, language, and culture, is considered criminal by these internationalists?
Yeah, probably. I'm afraid that all over Europe, it's not only the United Kingdom, even though they are one of the worst, those weak cultural relativists give in and give up to everybody who is speaking in favor of the Islamic dangerous ideology. But people are critical against, and they see as a threat. And of course, this is completely the wrong way around this problem. You cannot enter the United Kingdom if you say, if you're not incitement of, if you don't, I don't, and you don't, I'm sure, incite violence or hatred. I have nothing at all to do with that, but still.
No, I have not either. I wouldn't have lasted in radio 5 minutes, let alone 15 years. You know what I love, Geert? The BBC covered this on Thursday, and they said, far-right Dutch MP Geert Wilders has won an appeal against the Home Office decision, barring his entry. It's interesting to me that your ancestors in Holland who fought the Nazis, would they have been called far-right as well for standing up to Hitler because they believed in the sovereignty of your home country?
Of course not. And this is exactly the point I also make, the double standard that they have. But don't forget, the leaders in most of the European countries are weak. They are giving in. Most part of the electorate nowadays is also a growing part of the electorate is from Islamic origin. They have a big identity crisis. They don't know who they are. They don't know what culture they should fight for. And once again, I have nothing against people or against Muslims, but I know that the Islamic ideology, the stronger it becomes, the less freedom we will get. So we have to fight this totalitarian ideology. This is why I compared, by the way, Winston Churchill did in the 50s in his book, The Second World War, I compared the Quran with Mein Kampf, and I compared the Islamic ideology with other totalitarian ideologies, like communism or fascism.
Why do you say that the Quran is like Hitler's Mein Kampf? Obviously, that would incite a lot of reaction. Many people would say, wait a minute, are you an enemy of Islam? I know you're not, but I'd like you to explain what you mean by that.
Well, you know, I believe that Islam is not another leaf on the tree of religions. Of course, it has partly, maybe 5%, it's a religion. It has religious symbols like temples and a holy book and things like that. But I believe that Islam, unlike other religions, Christianity or Judaism, really has no intention to assimilate or to integrate. Islam wants to dominate our societies. The ideology is therefore totalitarian, and therefore I compare it indeed with communism or fascism. Once again, I'm not talking about the people. I know that the majority of the Muslims in our societies today are law-abiding people, but the ideology has what they call the kafirs, the people who are non-Islamic, has very bad things installed for us, for everybody is non-Islamic, and has no room for anything but Islam. And you see it if you... I traveled to almost every country in the Middle East where the Islamic culture was dominant. There was in Iraq, Iran, Syria. And you see that there is no country where the Islamic ideology or the Islamic culture is dominant, that you see a rule of law, that you see a civil society, that you see a functioning parliament that can send a leader home with 51% of a majority. This is not the case. And we get all immigration, legal and illegal, from those parts of the world in Europe. And we should stand up and fight and show who we are, what our identity is, and it's certainly not an Islamic identity, the culture that we have.
So you are calling for, are you still calling for the ban of 5 years on the founding of mosques and Islamic schools, a permanent ban on preaching in any other language but Dutch? Foreign imams should be forbidden to preach. Radical mosques should be closed and radical Muslims expelled. Do you still stand by those principles that you espoused in your book, Honest Talk? In March of 2005, you wrote a blockbuster of a book called Honest Talk. And in that book, this is what you called for. Do you still believe that these points should be implemented?
I really believe that they should be implemented because, once again, the more Islam a society gets, the less freedom we will have. And I believe that the immigration, which is often, unfortunately, illegal, but also very legal, we have a mass immigration from Islamic countries, is really changing our society for the worse. And I don't believe in Islamic schools either. I believe that young Muslim children, if they want to be independent and integrated, should go to schools with Dutch children, not separated and being educated in ideology of hate and intolerance. So yes, indeed, if Muslims in our societies want to adhere to our values, to our constitution, to our rule of law, they are very welcome to stay, and I would even like to help them to integrate. But if they cross the red line and start thinking about implementation of Sharia or commit crimes, I think there can only be one message, and that is that we will extradite you, and there's no room for such people in our societies.
You're absolutely right, Gert. We'll be back in just a minute with Gert Wilders on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
American Muslims have enriched the United States. They have fought in our wars, they have served in our government, they have stood for civil rights, they have started businesses, they have taught at our universities, they've excelled in our sports arenas, they've won Nobel Prizes, built our tallest building, and lit the Olympic torch. And when the first Muslim American was recently elected to Congress, he took the oath to defend our Constitution using the same Holy Quran that one of our founding fathers, Thomas Jefferson, kept in his personal library.
We're back now with my guest, Dutch parliamentarian Gert Wilders. Well, it's interesting to me that you have to go around with bodyguards since you wrote a book in your country. Are you still under the same protection?
Yeah, for exactly this month, for 5 years now. It started in 2004 because of my publication and what I said in Parliament and about Islam and mosques and radicalism. And yes, I got threats from all over the world, from the Netherlands, but also from Al-Qaeda-linked organizations.
Geert, does your government provide this security detail?
Yes, they do. They do. It's not my choice. If I wanted to have more or less, it's not my decision. It's the Secret Service and the decision of the Dutch Home Secretary to provide when it comes to parliamentarians for protection.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I admire that your government, that at least they're willing to protect you. It's more than I could say for the United States of America, which lets people twist in the winds who they don't agree with. You are not supported, strangely enough, by homosexual groups or women. They're the ones who have the most to lose by radical Islam. Why don't they support you?
Well, some of them do, actually. It's not that they don't support me. They do. Groups of them do support me, because you are right. If Islam would get its way, if there would be more Islamic influence in our societies, all the people that are non-Muslim, whether they are homosexual, whether they are women, whether they are apostates or renegades, or whether they are just intellectuals who are criticizing Islam, they will be the first to pay the price. It's especially the representatives of the Christian belief, however, where much of the Christians support my point of view that Those people, unfortunately, in our multicultural society are appeasing as well and are criticizing myself, indeed, leaders of the Jewish, leaders of the Christian community. But the real people, the common people in the street, support me. If there would be elections today, my party, and I'm referring to a poll from 2 days ago, would be the biggest party. If there would be elections, I could be the new Dutch prime minister. So there is a lot of support, but there is also a lot of resistance. I have to be honest about that.
Well, your society has always been a very tolerant society, and of course, I'm a student of the immune system, and we also understand how the retrovirus works. If you've studied HIV or any other retrovirus, they usually take advantage of a weakness in the immune system and then mimic the defense cells themselves and then take over the entire body politic, if you want to put this on a political level. That's what's going on in the West, which is that ultra-tolerance has enabled some of these radicals to enter the country under the guise of, let us say, asylum or please help me. They come in, the next day you wake up, they're trying to take over your country and throw you out of your own country, which I don't understand how anybody with any intelligence can't see it going on, which leads me to the next question. Since you wrote your book in 2005, have there been changes in your favor, meaning has Holland awakened in any way to the threat, or has Holland become weaker?
Well, let me first say that I agree with the analysis that, at least in Holland and most part of the Western world, we were tolerant also to the intolerant. And what I really hope that we start being intolerant to the people who are intolerant to our societies and to us. And because of this political correctness, we are not. Have things changed? Well, like I said, I represent now at least virtually in the polls the biggest party of the Netherlands. So things have changed, yes. But when you look at the policy of the Dutch government or the UK government or the German government or the French government, you see very little change. People talk about it more, but when it comes to policy, there is still so much politically correctness, also by the liberal and leftish press in Europe, that it sometimes sickens me a lot. But once again, the people are not fooled. The distance, the difference between the Vox Populi and the political elite is still huge. So we need more changes. We need not only to talk, but to act. And I think that by the next elections in Holland, we could really make a difference there.
Now, you state that a ruling elite exists among parliamentarians who only care about their own personal careers and disregard the will of the people. That's exactly what's going on in America. You have a two-party system that absolutely hates the people. And when the people stood up against the health care reform, which is socialized medicine here, Nancy Pelosi and others called them fascists, Nazis, etc., they were shocked to see the people care about their own future. Your party, who created your party and when was it formed? When did this new party begin?
Yeah, well, I was, before I started my new party, I was a member of parliament for the Conservative Liberal Party, as we say.
Oh, you already were in the system.
I already was in the system, but I got fed up with the current elite and the way they treated me, and I was not allowed and sanctioned to talk about, Islam and Islamization and the defending of our own values. So I left my former party after a lot of disagreement, and in 2004, I started my new political party, the Party for Freedom. It was in September 2004, and we took part 2 years later for the first time in the elections, and we got quite a result for a new political party. And then, because the old political parties only shouted at us and tried to demonize us in any possible way, as they by the way still do, we only became more popular. And the subject about the values and about Islamization is something, I mean, I hope that a lot of Americans come and see Europe and see that whether you go to Malmö or Copenhagen or Berlin or Amsterdam or Brussels or Paris, that our society is changing, that there is a parallel society where we have Sharia courts, where we have the most terrible thing, honor killings, where we have the most terrible things happening, and that political leaders looking in the other direction. And we really need to save our continent, and my message, I'm in the United States now, is that please, United States of America, my dear friends here, don't think it won't happen to you, because it is happening to you, and you will also pay the price if you look in the other direction and just ignore the facts that are on the ground today.
Your party, could American citizens make contributions, financial contributions to your party if they wanted to?
Well, they could, yes, and that would be very helpful for also my defense, because we were talking about the United Kingdom, and I luckily won that one. But in January, my criminal prosecution starts in the Netherlands, also because of my movie Fitna.
Criminal prosecution? A member of parliament for speaking his mind in Holland?
Yes. And this is a very sad thing, because the public prosecutor in Holland decided not to prosecute me. Then some people went to a court of appeal in Amsterdam, and the higher court of appeal ordered my prosecution. I could go for 20 months to jail.
Oh, my God. Well, we've got to help you. Garrett, we're going to make contributions to your legal fund. I know you didn't come on the program today to ask for money, but I know that money is the mother of politics, and especially the mother of law in the world today. We know that the opposition, the Sharia folks, are backed with unlimited funds, no doubt from Saudi Arabia and God knows where else. Is there an email address or a fund that's set up? If not, how would they make a contribution?
There is my Dutch website is called www.pvv.nl. P from Peter, the V for Victory, and the V for Victory.nl. And there you also find a link to the English website. And there people can see how they could help. It's not only that I'm being prosecuted for my thoughts in the Netherlands, but also the country of Jordan is threatening to ask for my extradition.
Which country?
Jordan. The Jordan prosecutor.
Oh, Jordan, a wonderful country of freedom, yes.
A wonderful country of freedom,
so long as you're a member of the ruling class. Now, I want to read your website again. I want the millions of people listening to this show to make a contribution, whether it's $5 or $1,000. It's www.pvv.nl. PVV.nl. It's going to go up on my website as well. Many, many people have come to my aid and contributed to my legal fund. And I know that they're looking for good causes that have meaning rather than the Republicans or the Democrats. And I would encourage everyone listening to this show to contribute to a Geert Wilders Defense Fund. And we're going to talk more about that later on the Savage Nation.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Era, there are one or two moments when nations come together and reach agreements that make history, because they change the course of history, and Copenhagen must be such a time. There are now fewer than 50 days to set the course for the next few decades. So as we convene here, we carry great responsibilities, and the world is watching.
Blue Monday, how are you? Blue Monday. Got to work.
It is Blue Monday on the Savage Nation, and of course you just heard the con man from England, Gordon Brown, the last days of Brown. He's sitting there in his bunker to some newspaper correspondents. They say he looks horrible, popping pills, but he's making no sense to anyone who knows science. He claims that there's only 50 days left to save the world. What he means is to turn the world over to him and the other pill-popping lunatics in the Socialist Internationale. I'm going to give you now the other side of the story, a real scientist as opposed to a pill-popping politician. Here's Lord Christopher Monckton speaking on the so-called climate treaty that will be signed in Copenhagen by Obama unless he is stopped. Listen.
At Copenhagen, this December, weeks away, a treaty will be signed. Your president will sign it. Most of the third world countries will sign it because they think they're going to get money out of it. I have read that treaty. And what it says is this. that a world government is going to be created. The word government actually appears as the first of three purposes of the new entity. The second purpose is the transfer of wealth from the countries of the West to third world countries in satisfaction of what is called coyly a climate debt, because we've been burning CO2 and they haven't, and we've been screwing up the climate. We haven't been screwing up the climate, but that's the line. And the third purpose of this new entity, this government, is enforcement.
So that's an actual scientist warning you about what Obama is about to do under the guise of protecting the environment. In clip 15, you hear more.
How many of you think that the word election or democracy or vote or ballot occurs anywhere in the 200 pages of that treaty? Quite right, it doesn't appear once. So at last, they are about to impose a communist world government on the world. You have a president who has very strong sympathies with that point of view. He's going to sign. He'll sign anything. He's a Nobel Peace Laureate. Of course he'll sign it. And the trouble is this. If that treaty is signed, your constitution says that it takes precedence over your constitution. And you can't resile from that treaty unless you get the agreement of all the other states' parties. And because you'll be the biggest paying country, they're not going to let you out. So, thank you, America. You were the beacon of freedom for the world. It is a privilege merely to stand on this soil of freedom while it is still free.
Yeah, from a beacon of freedom to a beaker of something else. Monckton concludes in the next clip.
In the next few weeks, unless you stop it, your president will sign your freedom, your democracy, and your prosperity away forever. And neither you nor any subsequent government you may elect will have any power whatsoever to take it back again. That is how serious it is. I've read the treaty. I've seen this stuff about government and climate debt and enforcement. They are going to do this to you, whether you like it or no.
So if you think Obama and Axelrod and George Soros don't have a plan for your children, you are mistaken. Soros wants to bust the buck. He's trying to break the dollar, in my opinion. Soros was one of the chief architects in electing Obama. Soros continues to downgrade the dollar in every conversation, saying that it must be destroyed in order to straighten out the world's economies. Remember who George Soros is. He is a Hungarian refugee who fled Hitler and came here, and his way of saying thanks to America was to put a knife in its back. Soros, remember, almost broke the British pound. Soros bet against the Malaysian currency, creating worldwide anti-Semitism. And now George Soros, who is the puppeteer behind Obama, is now struggling to make sure the U.S. dollar is destroyed once and for all. But this gang is interested not only in profit. They want total control over the airwaves. They want total control over your life from birth through the graveyard. Are you going to give it to them? How do you stop them? By educating yourself and others wherever you are. You must stop this madness. Palm Springs, Andrew, you're up on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, here's to the sounds of thunder and gunfire, my friend.
I don't understand. What? I don't understand that. Thank you for the call. I have no idea what that was, but it sounded like a car backfiring. Sacramento, Jeff, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, I've got a different take on the global warming hoax that we're experiencing. I just want to mention how the cars nowadays are like 90% more efficient than they were, you know, 40 years ago, and we're having less and less manufacturing, steel mills, et cetera. Well, in the first half of the 20th century, we had booming steel mills, factories, et cetera, and the cars were horribly polluting. Temperatures didn't go up in that time frame, did they? From 1900 to 1960, there was no temperature rise, half a degree, whatever. And now we're being told that if we don't do anything in the next 10 years, it's going to go up 4 or 5 degrees. Totally.
Let me make it even simpler. I want to talk now to people who have no knowledge of science whatsoever, but people with the ability to reason. So I'm therefore not directing this at any Democrats who elected Obama. I'm directing it to anyone who did not vote for Obama. That would be anyone with a fifth grade education and above. Would understand what I'm about to say. There were at least 7 ice ages that are known to have occurred over the period of time known as recorded history and before recorded history. 7 ice ages came and went. prior to the advent of the Industrial Revolution, prior to the advent of coal burning, prior to the advent of the invention of the automobile. How do you explain ice ages disappearing prior to man's arrival on the planet? The answer is because of forces outside of the Earth, because, for example, of either volcanic activity, underwater activity in the oceans, or according to sunspots. It has nothing whatsoever to do with man's activity. It is the greatest hoax in the history of the world, promulgated primarily by Al Gorleone, the head of the Gorleone Crime Syndicate, in my opinion, a man who has made a fortune off this big lie, and as well as industrialists such as Westinghouse, who have struck contracts with Obama to make, I believe, several $1 trillion in new products that are called green products. Now, let me say something. I have worked long and hard over the years to save rainforests, to work in the so-called jungles, if you want to call them jungles, not rainforests. Rainforest is a sort of PC word. But I have worked to record the law of rainforest and protect the environment. I've actually created parks. I've actually done much more for the environment than anybody in the American media and anyone in the American political structure. I'll say that again. Michael Savage has done more to protect the environment than all 400 members of Congress put together. Michael Savage has sacrificed years of his life to working for environmental causes, unlike anybody else in the mainstream media. And I know as much about it as they do, if not more. And I am telling you, this is a fraud from top to bottom. It is the greatest scam and con in history. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So while all of this is going on, Chairman Mao, Obama, legalizes marijuana. Now, you may say, well, that's good. The jails are too crowded with, you know, pot smokers. And I would agree with that. There are too many people in prison who are users rather than suppliers. And I totally agree with you on that. But couldn't you for a moment suspend your worship of Obama and understand that there's a different meaning for the legalization of marijuana than a benign desire to free people and give them choice, that it's actually to imprison them with a drug that clouds their judgment? Write down the words that I just stated. You see, marijuana is called dope for a reason. It makes people into dopes. It enslaves them. It is an entry-level drug. I won't even go into the medical dangers of marijuana, especially smoking marijuana. I will not bother doing that, and I certainly don't want to get into a debate with you as to marijuana is better than alcohol. I'm not proposing that you drink alcohol instead of marijuana. I'm just telling you that marijuana today is a psychedelic drug, at least 17 times more powerful than that that your mother and father may have smoked in the 60s. It is like taking an LSD trip. It permanently alters the brain cells. It permanently alters one's perceptions. It enslaves you the same way that opium enslaved the Chinese and permitted the entire nation of China to be manipulated by the British before the Boxer Rebellion. The problem here is we don't have a Boxer Rebellion brewing in order to throw the bums out, so to speak. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. All of these stories are really interrelated one way or the other. Soros manipulating the currency. Soros putting Obama in power. Soros trying to destroy the U.S. dollar. Soros saying the dollar has to go. If they ever change this world order to a new world currency, it's the end of America as you know it. The next nail in the coffin will be the so-called climate change treaty, which is utter and absolute rubbish and nonsense, as we've discussed over and over again. The greatest proof, again, is a simple one, something that even a person with a fifth-grade education could understand, which would eliminate anyone who voted for Obama. There have been several ice ages over the eons. Several ice ages came and went, meaning ice was down as far as, so far as I remember, ice had gone as far as Kentucky, I believe, if not farther than that. A total ice shelf from the northern hemisphere, covering the entire northern hemisphere, down almost to Wyoming in that area. And then slowly what happens? The ice recedes. And it receded when? After man started burning coal? No. When? After the car was developed? No. We were way past the last ice age. The ice age started to recede long before man occurred, long before man developed the industrial base that he now has. there was no relationship between the recession of the ice and the industrialization. It was due to other factors, such as sunspots that spark out the equivalent of a trillion hydrogen bomb explosions, for example. In other words, when you see a sunspot on the sun, our star, when you see a spot, that means that several hundred thousand hydrogen bombs have exploded on the sun. And that pulse of energy, that pulse of heat, travels through the atmosphere, and then when it occurs here, it's very mild by comparison. But that mild heat pulse causes changes in our global temperature. That is the most, that's the wisest of all the theories as to why temperature is slightly, and I say ever so slightly, increasing, very, very slightly. But the panic mongers are trying to rush you into a climate change treaty, the same way the liars are trying to destroy the world's greatest healthcare system and jamming a 1,500-page health plan down your throat without even letting you read it. It is all a lie. This is a global gang seeking to imprison you and your children for the rest of your life. Florida Mike, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Michael, and thanks for all you do for the cause of freedom. We really, really appreciate it that someone else...
I appreciate your appreciation. Now, what's on your mind?
I want to talk about CO2 levels in conjunction with what you just talked about, the ice levels. I've been concerned about trying to find some information about the percentage of CO2 in the atmosphere, so I Googled that, and nobody had it. But they do have some graphs out there showing the parts per million of CO2 in the atmosphere. And somebody, one of the government people or somebody said, you know, the CO2 levels have doubled since 350,000 years ago. Well, that's true. However, what they don't say is that 300,000 years ago, they were very virtually what they are today, the same in 250,000 years ago and the same 100,000 years ago. So, you know, we go in these cycles, but if you take that, I interpolated that in parts per million to find out what the percentage was, and I'm in my car, so excuse me if I don't have this exactly correct, but I believe it was about 1/10,000 of 1%. So if it doubles, you know,
how in the world could they be screaming that the world is coming to an end, that sea levels are rising and threatening cities like Shanghai, when it's total nonsense? How do they get away with writing stuff like this?
Because nobody's out there telling you are, but there's so many people who are just falsifying all this information. And what they're telling us is some things are actually factual, but they're leaving out other things that are factual, which show a totally different story. And it's just absolutely ludicrous.
But how does Obama get away with this? The answer is because the media is in his hands. He controls them like Nutty Putty. He can bounce them any direction he wants. There are no journalists left in journalism. And they have the nerve to attack Fox News and say it's an opinion organization rather than a news organization. And by comparison, what, MSNBC is a news organization? When all day long it's nothing but anti-family, anti-American, anti-military, anti-police, anti-everything that America stands for, and that's considered a news outlet by Obama? Forget about it. And this shall be the plague wherewith the Lord will smite all the peoples that have warred against Jerusalem. Their flesh shall consume away while they stand upon their feet, and their eyes shall consume away in their sockets, and their tongue shall consume away in their mouth. Who wrote that? Gerd Wilders? No. Michael Savage? No. That was written in the Bible by Zechariah, in the Bible, the Old Testament. What that is predicting a nuclear strike upon the people who are trying to wipe Israel off the map. And I direct you to some very, very promising news at last. Finally, there was good news over the weekend. Approximately 50 Iranian Revolutionary Guards were killed by a Sunni suicide bomber in their stronghold, and Iran is going crazy because they got a taste of their own medicine. As well as that, one of the Hezbollah secret sites that was being used to plot against the destruction of Israel was destroyed. God only knows how it was destroyed, but it too was destroyed. So it seems to me that the American CIA is very much functioning, if it's them at all. I don't know who else could be doing this. I haven't any idea who else could be doing it. Certainly the Israelis couldn't. The Israelis couldn't be doing it. They're too busy warning the world that the clock is ticking and someone else should do it. So I don't know who's doing it. But I'd like you to go to michaelsavage.com and check out the two stories from the Middle East that indicate that the Bible is on track to become true.
Savage.
We'll be right back. concerned about building ripped muscles. You're concerned about washboard abs. You're concerned about how your glutes look. All the while, these evildoers are going to take away your freedom, and they got you staring in the mirror at your glutes and your abs. It's unbelievable to me what a nation of narcissists we have become, so that bigger narcissists can take away our freedom itself. So then you read over the weekend that they bust people for insider trading on another subject, and they arrest some, mainly some Indian guys. Galleon hedge fund partner Rajaratnam, taken in by the FBI, and he's accused of insider trading that generated more than $20 million in profits. Wow, they really got the big fish. No, my friends, the big fish are the heads of the Federal Reserve. The big fish are the heads of the Treasury Department. Sure, $20 million is a lot of money, but it's about a day's pay for the man who ran the Treasury Department and is now living on an estate somewhere in Michigan and not been seen some since. $20 million is a lot of money, but not compared to $50 billion, is it? Is $20 million a lot of money compared to $1 trillion that was just stolen from you by the Democrat Party and given to their own friends without any accountability whatsoever? So you see these stories, insider trading, and your FBI, and they're marching, and they have the hats and the badges, and the poor guy looks forlorn. I'm sure that they'll go to the bottom of this, and the big fish will get away. It's like organized crime all over again. They get the guys in the streets, and the guys at the tops continue to do what they want to do. So I'm not impressed by any of this insider trading activity. In fact, I'm depressed by it because I know it's nothing but Obama's administration showcasing change and hope. Take a look, for example, without accusing the man of any wrongdoing, because we know what a lily-white, pure man he really is. And that's the head of Bank of America. Now, here's a guy who did a deal that nobody in the world understood why it was being done when it was done. He was forced to take on Countrywide Saving, if I remember correct, when it was a bust out. But he bought it with B of A money. No one knew why. He's about to retire with $100 million support in pension and whatnot, and nothing. Where's Obama's accountability? Where's Obama's transfer? Where is Obama's crackdown on Wall Street? The answer is nowhere. It's all a sham. The only people who are going to be corralled are you. 1-800-449-8255. Is the phone number. Go to michaelsavage.com. Borders, language, culture. I guess that's a crime. I should change the logo on my website. Because, you know, when you say borders, language, and culture to the international socialists, those are fighting words. They believe in open borders, a polyglot of languages so that there's no cohesion between the people. And, of course, culture means making it with a cow if you feel it. If it feels good, do it. If you feel like laying down in the gutter with a vulture, go ahead and do it. It will be approved by the New World Order because they know how to pacify you with drugs and unlimited dirty sex outside of marriage. That's their idea of controlling the population. Now, speaking of the dirty lie of the medical establishment, we get to that next. If you think that they're going to escape the laser beam of the savage eye, you're mistaken. Years and years and years ago, I and others were lobbying against the use of hormone therapy for women. And I fought this fight with many, many others in the alternative health world for years. And, of course, the liars in the drug industry, along with the puppets on a chain that they have in the medical industry who will do anything for a $500 stipend, came along and told women to take hormone therapy. Now, a lot of women resisted this. Their intuition said, wait a minute, haven't there been studies showing that hormone therapy increases the risk of breast cancer? And there were studies that were equivocal, but the pimps in the medical establishment who were bought off, this is not to say all doctors are pimps, just those who were paid for by the drug companies, they came out saying, ah, but sure, Chesterfields are good for the T-zone, as they said in the 30s. I smoke Chesterfields because it's good for the T-zone. Doctors did that in the 30s. They actually said they smoked a cigarette because it was good for their throat. The same way that these whores with medical degrees came out and said that hormone therapy is healthy for women. Well, guess what? A new study in the New England Journal of Medicine comes out and says what common sense would tell us. Hormone therapy has, in fact, increased the risk of breast cancer in women. Caused breast cancer, not only increased the risk, but it actually caused breast cancer for thousands of women. How do they know that? Because of a decline in hormone use, breast cancer rates went down. And risk in women who took hormones dropped after they quit the therapy. And the study shows that the prolonged hormone use caused breast cancer in 200,000 women. 200,000 women were given breast cancer because of the lies put out by the medical pharmaceutical industry as a result of, as I say, hormone therapy. So here we go again. Long-term hormone use is still going on. Breast cancer is still rising. It's a terrible tragedy for women, but there may be hope in the sense that where there is wisdom and knowledge, there is hope. In other words, diseases do not necessarily come out of the air. There are often reasons for the appearance of certain conditions and diseases. And for sure, we know that hormones are to be avoided by women. And again, I'm glad to tell you that at last, U.S. breast cancer cases are dropping in women aged 50 to 69 because many women have stopped taking hormone therapy, according to a new study in the New England Journal of Medicine. And I'm proud to tell you that I was one of the health writers, if you want to put it to you that way, because I wrote many books over the years in this field, who warned women against the use of such hormone therapy. But I'm going to go one step further on this. Many women listening to this show will nod their heads saying, yes, that happened to me. I know women who went to see their gynecologists, and the gynecologist told them, you have to take hormone therapy or I'm going to drop you as a patient. I know it for a fact. Many of these drug dealers with medical degrees were on the payroll of the pharmaceutical industry, and they forced women to take the hormones at the risk of losing their treatment, let alone their coverage. The doctor said, I'm going to throw you out of my practice unless you take these hormones. And many women, of course, did so, and as a result, they got sick from it. And so I hope I'm not giving some vicious, disgusting, low-life, sewer-crawling rats with law degrees a new living, but I'm sure that they are already crawling out of the sewers. The asbestos vermin are probably working up ads. All of the vermin who lived off the asbestos world will now live off this disease like the sewer rats that they are. But the bottom line here is hormone therapy caused breast cancer for thousands. I linked it up on michaelsavage.com. Ladies, download it and read it and get off those dangerous hormones. Okay? Chicago, Phil, you're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks for taking my call. I can't believe how you can connect the dots, really. I just wanted to make the comment that my wife is Lithuanian, and she's been here only about 10 years now. And mm-hmm. I've been there a number of times and spoke to not much of her family who've lived under the Soviet rule. And in fact, her father spent 10 years in Siberia because they were successful people money-wise. But in any case...
Oh, anybody with money was considered a counter-revolutionary to Stalin, to Mao Zedong, to Pol Pot, and of course now to Obama. He's definitely in the same league as the rest of them with regard to his animosity towards people's personal wealth.
Yeah, this is quite evident there. I think that the point I wanted to make was that this marijuana concern that you had, connecting the dots there was very, very, very excellent observation, because talking to the people there, you can see how alcohol was used as a way to pacify the public and the soldiers even. It was incredible, and how you draw this connection and see this foresight is quite interesting.
You mean in the ex-Soviet Union they drugged everyone with cheap vodka?
Yes, exactly.
And that's why Obama wants marijuana legalized, in order to make more people dopier and make them malleable. In other words, if they're getting high, they won't know what's going on around them, nor will they care less. All they need to know is that if they go to the government medical clinic, they'll get their government marijuana, and they'll get their free medical care, and they can vote in Fidel Castro's grandson. They wouldn't care.
You got it. You got it, Michael.
All right, I always get it. That's why I'm still in business, despite the forces lined up against Michael Savage. All right? New York City, WOR. Bob, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Dr. Michael. You're a light upon America and the world.
I hope so, and I hope that the light doesn't get put out too soon by Axelrod and company. They're on the warpath with Fox News, and I'm just a minnow compared to Fox News, and it's unlikely that they haven't noted the wisdom that comes out from your radio station in their hometown of Chicago, Washington, D.C., New York, and 380 cities around America.
If we got anything to do with your light, will never go out. Anyway, I just wanted to point out to you that what they've done is they've created a Federal Reserve Redux on us. In 1946, Senate Bill 7 created the Administrative Procedures Act. And if you read Senator McCarran's comments at that time, it talks about the federal government being in every aspect of every individual's life. And what they are about to do is to transfer all our financial operations over to the Bank of International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland, and the proxies that will handle our transactions will be the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, and then this new thing they set up called the Financial Stability Board.
It sounds to me like you're in the financial sector, Bob. You're calling from New York. Are you in that world?
Well, I work in a CPA firm. I do financial tax accounting, yes.
Well, where are they going with this? Why does a guy like Soros keep bad-mouthing the U.S. dollar? What is his intent? Do you think he shorted the dollar?
I'm sure he did. But the fact of the matter is the marketplace, the total marketplace in 2000 was an $80 trillion market. Between 2000 and 2008, they built the market to about a $600 trillion market. The government has been in the derivatives activities for 30 years. And what they did during this period, they actually sold derivatives short and left everybody else holding the bag, this recent crash that we had. But what they're going to do is they're going to take, you know, the Bretton Woods Agreement actually gave...
But wait, Bob, I'm following you, but I'm sure most people have already lost you. Let me backtrack just for a second with you. All the years that people were refinancing their houses with these cheap and easy mortgages, meaning they were taking the equity out of their houses and living on it, you can't say it was all the government's fault. It was encouraging greed and decadence in the average person. Take that vacation, buy that car, redo your house. It's just that the piper has to be paid, and there's nothing at the bottom of the barrel here. It's empty. It's an empty barrel. My father, for example, bought a mortgage in 1954 for a little $15,000 house. The idea of taking money out of his mortgage to buy a new car would have been unheard of. He never would have done it. And yet it become commonplace in America for the average person, take the equity out, go and buy a car, take a vacation. All it is all collapsed because it was a Ponzi scheme. So I wouldn't say it's all the government's doing in that regard, Bob. I would say that it was the individual who lived basically on nothing.
Ultimately, we are responsible for everything that's happening. All the arguments that everybody, bureaucracy, some people talk about religious, problems.
Do you think that Obama is going to get away with transferring the United States' wealth to a world currency? What's the talk on the street? Is he going to actually get away with destroying the dollar and transferring our wealth to, let us say, the euro or a new world currency altogether, which I'll call the Worldo?
Which is a new currency for Mexico, Canada, and the United States. Yes. This is an intentional agenda.
Well, let's say I have $10,000 in the bank in U.S. currency. What happens the day that they transfer it to the Worldo or the Obama-O?
They might tell you got $10 worth.
Oh, my God. So they would say your dollar is now worth 10 cents on the dollar? They could just destroy us overnight? Take away all of our accumulated wealth?
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. My God, it's worse than I fear. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We're going to undermine fundamentally the quality of life for our children by doing this. And the projections for the deficit for the next 10 years under the Obama budget are $1 trillion a year. Now, you can't blame that on George Bush. And we're taking the public debt from 40% of GDP, which is tolerable but still too high, up to 80% of GDP, which means we're basically on the path towards a banana republic type of financial situation in this country. And you just can't do that. You can't keep running these programs out and not paying for them, and you can't keep throwing debt on top of debt.
Yes, you can if you're George Soros, who put his puppet Obama in power, and you want to destroy the U.S. dollar. and make fortune upon fortune. Because you got to understand, there are people who are mentally ill for whom no amount of money is enough. Just as there are people who are mentally ill, history will prove this, for whom no amount of power is enough. Now, certainly we're not accusing a billionaire genius like George Soros of mental illness. On the contrary, he's one of the most brilliant men in the history of the world. Look at what he's gotten away with. The fact of the matter is, though, is that even a child could tell you that if you inherit a debt of a dollar, you don't solve that debt by increasing the debt to $3. But Obama the genius, the Harvard lawyer who inherited a debt of $1 trillion, said that the cure is to make it $3 trillion after 1 year. And yet you have schmucks at MSNBC and CNN and wherever else who actually agree with him. They themselves don't understand the first things about finance, or they're just, propagandists who work for the Obama administration. Just as patients were lied to by doctors about hormone therapy and they wound up getting cancer, 200,000 women unnecessarily got cancer because of the hormone replacement therapy, and that's because they were afraid to stand up to the doctor. Today, 300 million people are about to lose their freedom because they're about to stand up to Dr. Obama, who, frankly, if he was a doctor, would lose his license because he's a quack. San Francisco Lance, you're on the Savage Nation.
Mike, I would almost rather hear you talk all about the devaluation of the dollar rather than my subject, which is estrogen and lack of ovaries. For women who have tragically lost their ovaries, how do you feel about hormone replacement therapy?
For women who have tragically what, please?
Lost their ovaries, that is to say, surgically removed.
Why? Oh, so they need the hormones because they don't have any hormones at all. Well, that's a risky one for me to comment on because I'm going to fall into a quagmire. I'm not a medical doctor, first of all. I'm a medical scientist by training. But until a person knows the full details of the case, the situation, the patient, how much of a hormone replacement therapy you're talking about, he'd be a fool to offer any advice. And so at that point, I'll have to say sayonara. Houston, Texas, Vito, welcome to the Savage Nation. Vito, welcome to the Savage Nation. Not there. Cooking a pasta fazool, and that's the end of it. San Diego, David, welcome to the program.
Michael Savage, a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you.
I wanted to thank you for everything you do on the radio and giving a lot of truth to the people. I also wanted to challenge you to update your website to put the reasons why each race should be about borders, language, and culture. And I really want to quickly touch on it for black, because I'm black myself, and a lot of blacks don't subscribe to conservatism, and they are destroying middle-wage jobs to low-income jobs. You should show how, even with slavery, how blacks tended the land, fought for freedom, finally got freedom, took a part of the American dream. Now it's being destroyed by ultra progressism or whatever they want to call it. And at the same time, blacks are being definitely blinded by so many agendas, by this Obama phenomenon, by this gay liberalism, by so many things. And to be honest, as a black man, I am quite concerned for the white male. I'm starting to look going, if I was a white guy, I'd be quite upset at the things that's going on. And it's just so...
Well, I'm quite upset for the black male. I saw that Morehouse College, which is an all-black college, had to outlaw cross-dressing because so many black men were showing up in drag on the campus. If I'm not mistaken, wasn't Morehouse originally a Christian college?
Yes, it was.
Take a look at what happens when a university goes tolerant. The next thing you know, the men show up in dresses, and they're not even in Scotland. We'll have to leave it at that point. All I can say is liberalism is a mental disorder. Ultra-tolerance is killing us. Borders, language, and culture. And Banned in Britain is down to 100 copies.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now,
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We've had an amazing opportunity today to speak with Geert Wilders, the Dutch parliamentarian and filmmaker who was banned from Britain simply for speaking the truth about the dangers of radical Islam. Well, he just had that ban overturned in the courts. Geert, welcome back to the Savage Nation. I know you're very busy and you're giving us this exclusive interview today. Has anyone in the American media wanted to cover you here while you're in America? Have they celebrated with you your freedom?
Well, not so far. I intend to speak tomorrow evening at the Temple University here in Philadelphia and Wednesday at the Columbia University, but both are being Muslim student organization are trying to make it cancel this whole event. So there was not so much press now, but in my former visits to the United States, I indeed have been invited by Fox News. There was many shows there, also with CNN. That was what less pleasant. But I did a lot of press in my previous visits before here in the United States.
Well, I'm honored that you would take time out to warn America. What you're really here for is to warn America that what's happening in your country of Holland is going to happen here, no matter what the fifth column says in this country. And most people don't even know what the fifth column stands for. But today the fifth column is far more sophisticated than it was during the period of the 1930s when Hitler created the German-American Bund, for example, where they ran the American flag on one side of the stage and the Nazi flag on the other, and they had pictures of George Washington and Adolf Hitler on the stage, and they said that Hitler was just the George Washington of Germany and he meant America no harm. We know where that went, and we know what he really intended. In essence, you see a parallel battle today.
I really do. I really see a parallel battle, and my message here indeed is that not only take care about yourself and look, forget the political correctness and look what is happening in your own country, but also bear in mind that you are losing an important ally, which is called Europe. We now still adhere to the values of Rome and Athens and Jerusalem, but in 10, 20, maybe 30 years, Europe, if we don't change anything there, and also with the support of the United States, I hope, there will be the values of Tehran and Mecca that will be dominant there. So you are losing not only part of your own identity. I want the Americans to stand up and fight for their own culture, but also you are losing a very important ally in Europe, because Europe is changing, and Europe is changing for the worse, and it is happening here as well. And we really need to stand up and fight for our own values, which are once again not based on Islam, but are based on freedom. And all the freedom-loving people should stand up and say, hey, enough is enough. We won't take any more. And we elect now leaders that are brave. I always say we have enough chamberlains in Europe. We need more Churchills. And, well, if you allow me to say so, I think the same applies to the United States.
Geert Wilders is speaking today on the Savage Nation. And I want to set the record straight. Geert considers himself to be a libertarian. And he represents the true iconoclastic Dutch society that America and the rest of the world had always admired. But he woke up one day, I'm just speaking for myself now, Geert, forgive me, and he said that our tolerance has created an untenable future for this country. You also say that your allies are not the far-right Le Pen. You said you will never join up with the fascists and Mussolinis of Italy. And you say you do not want to be linked with the wrong rightist fascist groups. And, of course, I agree with you 100%, but that's how you are being smeared, isn't that correct?
Yes, everywhere. Everywhere they try to put us in a kind of extremist or fascist corner. And, well, we are not. It's a really an honest decision not to get involved with any party in Europe or anywhere in the world that has anything to do with racism or fascism. I'm a democratic elected parliamentarian, and I only use democratical means within our rule of law. I get a lot of support of it. And let me tell you, Michael, if I really was some kind of extremist, I would be I would not be at the core of the I would be at the margin of the Dutch political system. I would have 1 or 2% of support. Being the fact that we are now the biggest party in the polls in the Netherlands with more than 20% of the vote within a 10-party system. That's a lot. Proves that we are not involved with anything that has to do with violence or extremism. We are just standing up. But there is so much at stake that all these leftish and liberal politicians and the press know that they don't want the change that we advocate, and therefore they try to put us in a most nasty corner. But the people are not fooled by that, and they will support the prevention of the Islamization of our societies and fighting for our freedom anyway.
Well, before you go, I want to quote your interview in the UK, because I think that it says a lot. You say, take a walk down the street and see where this is going. You no longer feel like you are living in your own country. There is a battle going on, and we have to defend ourselves. You say, before you know it, there will be more mosques than churches. And so your solutions are pretty clear. If you had total power, which nobody can have in Holland, what would you tell the people need to be done? What should be done in Holland to save your country and Europe?
Well, first, we should stop the mass immigration from people from Islamic countries, not because those people are wrong or bad people, because we have enough Islam, and the mass immigration and the demography is killing our society. So first, the first thing I would do is stop the mass immigration from Muslim countries. The second thing I would do is that I would advocate that people who are crossing the line, who are committing violent crimes and are sentenced for that, should be sent away. If they don't want our society, if they don't want our values, there is no room for them in our society. And thirdly, I would like to install in Europe some kind of, we can learn from the United States, some kind of European First Amendment. Because nowadays, why I am getting sued, and many others, it's not only about me, I'm not even that important, but many people in Europe are being sued because we lack a First Amendment, and people who are in favor of those Islamists, or those Islamists themselves are suing us incredibly, and they have a lot of money, they have a lot of support from Middle Eastern countries and from anywhere, and we don't. So stop the immigration, be tougher on people who don't adhere to our laws, and thirdly, make some kind of First Amendment, the freedom of speech, stronger in our European constitutions.
Geert Wilders is a member of parliament in Holland. His website is www.pvv.nl. I'm Michael Savage. I suggest that everyone listening to this show pay close attention to what you just heard and make a contribution right now by going on that website. Geert, I want to thank you very much. I know you're very busy today and on a very short schedule. And if we can help you at any time by telephone or any other way, we're going to give you the First Amendment anytime you want it, so long as I'm still on the radio.
Thank you so much, Michael. It was really an honor to be on your show, and I hope you will fight your exclusion order as well, and I'm sure you will win.
Well, God bless both of us. God bless the Western nations while they're still here.
Savage.
Congress is a group of, lobbyists out of touch with the average person. They consider us peons. Many members of Congress claim to defend the little people, then fly home on their private jets to fundraisers, collecting a lot of money to use in their upcoming campaigns. Many in Congress support laws pressing workers into unions, even though a recent poll shows 81% of non-union workers do not want to form a union at their workplace. With us now from the Heritage Foundation to look at this is James Shirk.
Thanks, Michael, for having me on. Congress is pushing unionization very hard. There's several bills before Congress. The misnamed Employee Free Choice Act, that would take away workers' secret ballot rights to vote in a private secret election on whether or not they want to join a union, and replace it with a publicly signed union card process where the unions could come in and then have the unions pressure the workers into joining in public because they know exactly how you voted. You've got another bill, the misnamed Respect Act. I gotta love the names of these bills, which ends the supervisory exemption. Right now, managers and bosses can't be members of a union because you wouldn't want to have your boss coming up to you and saying, hey, by the way, John, don't you want to join the union? The boss has such enormous leverage over the workers that it would be very destructive for him to be part of the collective bargaining unit. And these are restrictions that are in the law, too, to protect ordinary workers. Well, unions don't like these restrictions on their power, and they've got a lot of influence in Congress. They spent $1 billion on the last election to elect President Obama and the current Democratic Congress. And so they're pushing to get rid of the secret ballots, which protect workers' rights. And they're pushing to get rid of the exemption for supervisors. So you could have your boss, if you're in a union, your employer, your manager in the union with you. And if you did anything against the union, have your boss coming down on the union side. Well, as much as Congress wants to push these on workers that don't work for Congress, the law completely exempts them from the consequences of their own actions. Because by statute, by the laws that Congress has passed, congressional employees, congressional staff cannot belong to labor unions. So while Congress says very happily that unions are good for workers, they're good for companies, they're not going to risk anyone's jobs, Congress itself recognizes that having unions on its workplace would be destructive to itself and destructive to its own business operations. Congress does not want its own workers being intimidated into voting to join a union. Congress certainly would not stand for having its own supervisory employees, its own managers, legislative directors, and chiefs of staff selected not on the basis of their merit, but being part of the collective bargaining unit and being selected based on seniority. Can you imagine a member of Congress who had to stick with a bad chief of staff just because he was there based on seniority? Well, that's what they want to force on the private sector. Supervisors and managers not being promoted based on merit, but simply because they're in the union, they've got the seniority, they've put in their time, and so you're running a division of a company because you've got the connections in the union, not because you're someone who's good to run the company.
What effect is that going to have on companies in the private sector?
If you had your entire department run by someone who wasn't the most skilled, wasn't the most qualified, but he had the seniority, it would lead to layoffs. It would lead to companies doing much worse. And in the current economic times, workers simply can't afford that. We can't afford any more job losses. But as much as members of Congress say that that's not going to happen, they don't believe that would happen, they're not going to stand for it happening in their own workplaces. It's complete hypocrisy. And again, when it comes down to the secret ballot elections, Congress would not dream of taking away its employees' rights. It would not dream of allowing its own employees to be forced into a union, but it wants to force that on private sector companies. Well, take a look at General Motors. Take a look at Chrysler, the steel industry, the airlines. Company after company after company have been bankrupted after they're organized by unions. Tens, hundreds of thousands of jobs have been lost. That is not a good deal for many of the workers who signed on to the unions believing that they were doing something that would strengthen them on the job, and it turned out they didn't. But at the end of the day, the union drove General Motors into a ditch. Unions have driven dozens, hundreds of American companies into bankruptcy, or even those that they haven't bankrupted have forced mass layoffs on. And as much as Congress tries to say that, no, we don't believe that's actually going to happen, they know it's going to. They know it's destructive for a company to be organized because they won't allow their own employees to join a union. Congress should not be tweaking the law to force its employees into joining unions. So the law should be neutral. If workers want to join a union, they should absolutely have the freedom to do that. We have free association in this country. But if workers don't want to join a union, if workers look at the companies that have failed after they unionized and decide they don't want to take that risk, the law should not stack the deck in favor of them joining a union that could cost them their jobs. The law should not take away workers' privacy. It should not bring bosses into the collective bargaining unit so your supervisor can pressure you into doing something you don't want to do. There's no reason for that except to give a payoff to the unions who spent so heavily to elect the current Congress. And Congress would also not accept the same sort of restrictions that unions place on their workers.
Well, what are some of the downsides to being unionized?
Most Americans don't know this, but if you belong to a union, the union does not set only your minimum wage. The union also sets your maximum wage. You cannot get paid more than the collective bargaining agreement calls for unless your employers negotiated it with the union. There's no merit pay. There's no bonuses unless the union gives the thumbs up. And for the most part, they do not want to give the thumbs up to talented employees. They don't want employees who work harder than other employees to get paid more than that. Because think about it. Say you've got a union contract for $20 an hour, but you've got some particularly hardworking individuals who are more productive than the rest of the people in their division, and they're earning $30 an hour. Well, what are those employees going to think? Why am I paying union dues? What good is the union to me? If I can get more through my own hard work, then the union can negotiate for me when it comes time for contract renegotiations. It weakens the union's hold and their control over the workplace when individual employees get paid more based on the hard work they put in, so they very rarely allow it. Merit raises are very rare in union shops. Now, the downside for workers is that means no matter how hard you work, you can't get ahead. You'll get what the union negotiated for you, but that's all you're going to get. A lot of hardworking employees think that's a bad deal. But what would any worker do? If you can't get paid more for working harder, you're not going to work harder. Shock of shocks. Study after study after study shows that with performance pay, workers become more productive. They work harder. They get higher wages. Their company gets higher profits. Everybody wins. But unions don't want that happening at their work sites because it undermines the union's own power. So they don't allow that kind of performance pay that rewards individual achievement. Well, it's ultimately destructive to the companies involved. They've got less productive workers. It harms their productivity. It harms their profits. It's bad for companies. And in a time like this, when companies are hurting so badly, it's also bad for jobs. If a company can't get the most out of its workforce, it's not in a very good situation with private sector companies laying off so many workers and so many going bankrupt.
Doesn't Congress use the merit pay system?
They use merit raises all the time. Most congressional offices offer merit pay and offer bonuses and individual awards to hardworking employees to reward hard work, to reward achievement, to allow hard workers to get ahead. But if they can recognize the value of it for their own offices, then why do they think it's any less valuable and any less essential in the private sector? American workers should have the option of working hard to get ahead. If you're forced into a union, you can't do that right now. Congress has two sets of laws they're trying to set up, one for its own employees and one for everyone else in the private sector. And in the private sector, they want large numbers of Americans to be pushed into joining unions. They want to take away the secret ballot. They want to stack the legal deck so that most workers are going to wind up choosing a union. Even if after considered reflected choice, in the privacy of the voting booth, you'd vote no. In the presence of several union organizers at your home at night, you're going to say yes just to get them off your back. They want to stack the deck in favor of private sector workers joining unions and having all the restrictions on them, such as no merit pay, no merit raises, no bonuses without the union's consent that implies. But they would never countenance this for their own employees. They don't allow their own staff to unionize, and they make heavy use of the sort of merit pay that rewards hard work that unions simply don't allow in the private sector. It's complete hypocrisy. It's two sets of rule books, one for Congress and one for everyone else.
James Shirk, thank you for being on the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
There are many questions raised about the safety of both the seasonal and the swine flu vaccination shots. Joining us now is Robert Scott Bell with a story not being told by the mainstream media about the swine flu vaccine.
Thanks, Michael. Good to be back with you. We've been following a lot of information that's coming out fast and furious on the flu shot this year, as you know, whether it be the swine or the seasonal flu vaccination. But there's a huge story that's trying to be buried by the mainstream media right now. A Washington Redskins cheerleader, professional football cheerleader. They're all crying about talk radio hosts, whether they're going to own football teams, but they're missing the point of what's very important here is we had a viable, healthy cheerleader, an athlete that was struck down in her prime after receiving the seasonal flu shot. A 25-year-old woman, her name is Desiree Jennings, and she developed what's called a severe side effect from the flu shot she received some weeks back. Now, what's interesting about this, in our U.S. press corps that has been adopting so-called pharmaceutical agendas, whether they realize it or not, they're downplaying this link. And this is not a woman, 25, who suddenly became knowledgeable about medicine and shots, who's claiming, hey, the flu shot did me in. In fact, she went to some top doctors at Johns Hopkins, and they're the ones that made the link to this dystonia that it's called, this neurological impairment disorder, and the shot that she had received. Now, this, they're also claiming, interestingly enough, and this now comes out of the CDC, because you would think that the Centers for Disease Control, like, you know, crime scene investigators of the federal government, would be all over this story wanting to, let's dig to the bottom, let's get to the heart of this matter and find out what happened with this case. But immediately, they're proclaiming that, oh, there's not a link, they're distancing this, and it's just not proven. And in fact, it's very rare, maybe one in a million. You know, again, trying to make it as if, well, it's not likely to happen to you. But when it happens to you, when it happens to your child, it's one in one. And, of course, the delinking is not certainly not what they do when it comes to the attacks that they do regularly on dietary supplements, herbs, and otherwise. Should somebody get a hangnail from a botanical like echinacea, they'll be all over it. The mainstream media will parrot out the dangers of herbs unregulated by FDA. But here you have the seasonal flu shot that they claim, well, it's standard. And the H1N1 shot now that they say, oh, it's the same way they make the seasonal one. And now we have a healthy cheerleader cut down in her prime. So as I look at the mainstream U.S. type covering of this story, it says the headline, woman claims flu shot gave her neurological disorder. Now, the subtle use of language, and I know you're so well versed in this, is interesting where they say it's just some woman claiming this. So it kind of distances from a connection here. But when you actually go to the original story as it was covered in the United Kingdom, funny enough, they should ban you. But in the coverage here, they're actually going to the heart of this. They're actually stating the link here. They're saying the flu and a shot to the system. And they're talking about this woman, Desiree Jennings. She can whisper softly but not talk loudly. She can run a 3K, but she can't walk 5 feet normally. She can move sideways and backwards but not forward.
Well, they claim one in a million. How often is it really, though?
And, of course, this is something that when they claim it's one in a million, I've been interviewing doctors now who are looking at this and saying it's actually happening much more frequently than we are being led to believe by the CDC. These neurological impairment disorders, the autism spectrum diseases, and it's not all about the mercury, which is bad enough. As we know, mercury, the second most toxic metal known to man, and somehow they claim it's safe if there's 25 micrograms still left in a flu shot in the guise of thimerosal. And when we had the controversy, interestingly enough, of another doctor, Kent Holtorf, in fact, this appeared, and then it went viral on YouTube, his appearance on Fox News, they interviewed him about the swine flu shot, and they asked him, hey, are you going to give this to your kids? And rather than saying, just like most of the docs on that program, oh yeah, of course I will, like we covered the Dr. Pretty's with conflicts of interest from the American Academy of Pediatrics, he actually says, no, I'm not. I won't give this to my patients. I'm not going to give it to my kids. I'm very concerned about this. And the reason he said also was he went into the adjuvants. In other words, in these vaccinations, they actually add specific substances to cause a hyperimmune response, an overreaction to the little amounts that they put in there. And, of course, the most common have been used over time include another heavy metal known as aluminum, which we know is linked to Alzheimer's and other neurological degradation diseases. But the big one he was mentioning, and the moment he mentioned it, he was diverted by the host that went back to the issue of mercury and thimerosal and never allowed him to talk about the squalene-based adjuvants, which have been written about in the medical journals, as well as a very prominent book that was released some years back about Gulf War illness. And Gary Matsumoto wrote an excellent book, an expose on this called Vaccine A. And it was all about the anthrax vaccine given to our troops, you know, out there trying to protect us here in America. And our own government assaulted them with untested experimental vaccines, including the squalene adjuvant, which, as you know, Michael, it's an oil that can be ingested safely, can be put on the skin safely. But the moment it is injected, somehow now it's a hyperimmune stimulant, creating or accredited with creating, if you will, a lot of the symptoms associated with the Gulf War illness. And this they want to keep secret from us as a part of this H1N1 shot, which they claim is safe after 2 to 3 weeks. Explain to me how after 2 to 3 weeks they can make a blanket statement. The CDC, with all the firepower, the muscle power, the engines, the economics that they get from everybody, including all the degreed medical professionals, all saying that in 2 to 3 weeks they can determine safety of a vaccine.
How do they do that?
Big question. So they've clearly now become a marketing, if you will, or promotional arm of the vaccine industry rather than, let's say, a governmental institution that's claiming to be looking out for the health of all Americans. How are we going to protect them from the swine flu? Is it by injecting? Well, let's not even talk about the injection. Talk again about the inhaled version of the MedImmune form, which is a live attenuated virus, which states right in the package inserts to keep away from immune deficient, immune compromised individuals for the first 21 days after inhaling this stuff. And of course, who are they targeting? They're targeting the doctors and nurses in hospitals where the most immune compromised individuals reside, at least temporarily. So the very prevention technique that they're using could precipitate the very pandemic they claim to want to prevent. In New York this week, breaking news as a judge halts the flu vaccine mandate for health workers. I've been covering this story because it looked like finally the doctors, the nurses, the good people trying to do good are saying, hey, this is too much too soon. This is too fast. You can't force this on us. And for the first time, they actually fought back. And in New York, the state Supreme Court, a state Supreme Court judge, issued a restraining order against, this was from last Friday, against the state from enforcing this, as they call it, controversial, and I would agree it is controversial, mandatory vaccination. And this came as the Public Employees Federation sued to reverse the policy requiring these shots and nasal inhalers for seasonal and swine flu viruses, arguing that State Commissioner, Health Commissioner Richard Daines overstepped his authority. How interesting is that? Now the medical profession from within starting to rebel against the pharmaceutical industrial complex. That could be a sea change. We're going to keep an eye on this and see where this goes.
Exactly.
In the meantime, you've got good doctors that are actually working and encouraging their patients to be exposed to sunlight for the production of vitamin D or taking vitamin D3 supplementations. Some doctors are actually acknowledging the role of silver as a medicine, although in the U.S. the FDA regulates that as a dietary supplement now. But again, there's a lot of docs stepping up and saying, we need to look back into the natural realm and protect and defend and really rebuild immune systems rather than potentially creating neurological diseases in the guise of protecting people from flu strains that they admit are no more dangerous than the annual flu that usually comes around in regards to the swine flu claim. And then the other fear that they're throwing out is that, oh, there are more children dying this flu season than a typical flu season year. What they failed to mention as well, Michael, is that the stats are running back 7 or 8 months. And, of course, the typical flu season doesn't start until about now. So the fear game is being played beautifully. The handbook is being played, and our government is actually just riding it for all it's worth. And the profiteers, if you will, within the pharmaceutical industrial complex are laughing all the way to the bank at our expense. Where is the freedom to heal? This is something that we stand for, that I stand for. I know you stand for the freedom of all Americans to choose the health care that they believe is right for them, not a form of disease management that is laid down high from above the Obama administration as it's taking over the entire three aspects of our government and combining all of that into one powerful executive branch by fiat, that we all must basically become robotic medical automatons accepting drugs and vaccines that may or may not be safe, approved by government, but certainly not approved by those who love liberty.
Where can we read more?
You can always check out the blog at robertscottbell.blogspot.com. Also, link through the podcast. We're staying up on this, and great to spend the time, have the opportunity to share this with the Savage Nation.
Well, thanks for the report, Robert.
Thanks again, Michael, for having me back on to raise the awareness here of the global threats to the health of all Americans, much less threats being posed by bureaucrats within Washington, D.C., who wouldn't know freedom if it came in the guise of a shot in their, well, shall I say, their arm. Thanks, Michael.
I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
So you heard Obama was in San Francisco for yet another fundraiser. What you might not have heard was that there were huge protests against him. Why? Well, the media is on his side. And you might not have heard Obama say this behind closed doors.
And I want everybody to know who are standing in the way of progress. I'm not tired. I'm just getting started. You can throw whatever you want at me. Keep it coming. We're going to get this done. We're going to get health care done. We're going to get clean energy done. We're going to get climate change done. We're going to fix our schools. We are going to deal with the problems internationally that I was elected to deal with.
You see what he says when he thinks he's in a room with just friends? His extremist base? But it gets worse.
Another way of putting it is when, you know, I'm busy and Nancy's busy with our mop cleaning up somebody else's mess. We don't want somebody sitting back saying, you're not holding the mop the right way. Why don't you grab a mop? Why don't you help clean up?
We don't hang on to the past. We always move forward. And that movement doesn't begin in Washington. It begins with you. It begins because the American people decide it's time to move forward. You decide it's time for change. And if you do that now, just as you did during the campaign, we are not only going to rebuild our economy, we are not only going to pass health care, but we're going to do what earlier generations have done. We are going to leave something better for our children, not just here in the United States, but all around the world. So I hope that you aren't tired either, because I expect you to stand along with me as we get this business moving.
Sharkers of the world, unite. Now we'll take your calls on the Savage Nation. Thanks for calling the Savage Nation. You're next up.
How are you? Hey, you know, you talked a while back about why people weren't having children. And this type of thing is exactly why we chose not to have children. The writing was on the wall in the 90s, and now this is blatant.
Well, look, it's a decision that you have a right to make. There's no obligation to have children. Children are very difficult. It's 24/7. And if you have children, you know what I'm talking about. It never ends and never should end. If you don't have children, that's a choice. However, let me put this in context, because these are certainly not the worst of times right now, Warren, nor are they the best of times. And I will remind you that people had children even during the plague. They had children during the Black Death. They had children during hurricanes, storms, tornadoes, invasions, and whatnot. So there's something to it, Warren, that encourages people to bring children into the world, even in the worst of times.
You're right. I mean, but on top of having to deal with my mother-in-law, Michael, and then...
Oh, you were setting me up for that one.
Well, listen, thank you for your support.
Look, I understand. Well, I'm not saying you have children to be a patriot, but what I'm saying is, okay, yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
So she's difficult. Mom's difficult.
You know, she I love her. Like every mother-in-law, she's got her moments, and conversely, so do I. So there you have it.
Well, you're lucky you have someone to play off against. I have a new way to relate to life that I'm getting older and wiser, Warren. I got to tell you, I bicycle every morning, a couple of miles, pretty flat surface. But every morning I wind up, you know, like grimacing when someone's in my way or some idiot walking a dog on a long leash. You know what I mean? Or the idiots are on the wrong side of the bike path and you have to honk and yell or whatever. Please get over. You know, that kind of thing. So I said, you know, this is not a good thing for me. I don't enjoy it anymore. Every time I go out. So for a while I tried this technique. I say, try 10, the 10 theory. You're going to encounter 10 people who are in your way. Count them. There's 10. Then a few minutes later, there's number 9. And, you know, after the 10th one, you can get angry. And usually it's never more than 9. You know what I mean? Or 8 or 9. But I said, that's not a way to look at your fellow humans. So the other day, I started a new way to bicycle, Warren, which is this. Look at your fellow human. Look at your fellow human. Isn't it nice that they're out on a bike path? Would you rather have nobody there? Would you rather be bicycling in a world without people? Would you rather see nobody? Is that the world you want to live in? And you know something? It was like magic for me. You talk about anger management. It really worked. I don't know the people, but I said they are your fellow human. So they're idiotic and they're wandering around like dazed, but whatever. It didn't matter to me at that point. I just saw them as fellow humans. It was a big change for me.
Absolutely. You know, the last time I spoke with you, the last time I checked in, was when you and Mrs. Savage broadcast about 10 years ago.
What?
And, yeah, do you remember that?
Tell me what it was about. I don't.
Boy, it was, it just struck me, and I had to call, and that was the last time I called in, but you and Mrs. Savage were on the line, and I just called, and I just checked in, and thank you for doing just everything that you do, and it's been about 10 years, and I'm just,
wow.
I just needed to check.
What city do you live in, Warren?
I live in the East Bay in a little town near Richmond.
Well, Warren, I'll tell you what, since it's our 10th anniversary as distant friends, I'm sending you a free copy of Band of Britain. This is the Savage Nation. For those of you longtime listeners, I told you when I was a young guy trying to find my way, I did a lot of crazy things, and I followed a lot of odd, interesting, crazy people sometimes to see what it was all about. I remember I saw a street preacher down in the West in the Village called Brother Billy. He was just on a soapbox, but the man was so wrapped up. And he was hollering. He was screaming. And, you know, a small crowd gathered in Washington Square Park, and I was one of the crowd. Well, he and I struck up a conversation, Brother Billy and I. Before I knew it, I was speeding north on 3rd Avenue in my old green Hornet, my little green Volvo, Volkswagen, little four-on-the-floor Volkswagen before I left New York for good. And we went up to his storefront church. Actually, it wasn't his, to a storefront church in Harlem. And he said to me the way, You want to see religion? You want to see religion? I'll take you to where religion is. You want to see God? I'll take you where you'll see God. You'll feel God. Well, I enjoyed going up there. And I tell you, when I walked into that, it was probably a black Abyssinian church. The people were just hollering and they were singing. It was so heartfelt that the floors themselves were moving. I said, this is the closest I have come to real worship in my entire life. I've been in synagogues, I've been in churches. I mean, I've gone to St. Patrick's Cathedral on a Christmas Eve to see like the highest of the high. I wanted to see a great service. It was beautiful. It was beautiful. It was stunningly beautiful, but it wasn't moving. It was awe-inspiring, but not moving. This little storefront was moving. And so as I say, here I am much older than I was then, and this fellow, Pastor Manning, sounds to me like the real McCoy. And, one of these days, if I ever get to New York, I'm going to make a point of trying to go up there and see how the Italian food is in there. But I hear they have the best veal in the city around there. Okay, moving on. It's Blue Monday on the Savage Nation.
You saw me standing alone without a dream in my heart.
Go to michaelsavage.com and sign the petition, will you please?
Blue Moon
Savage.